So, you know where I went the other weekend?
I wouldn't even guess. I'm
Don't even
scared.
venture to guess.
Yeah.
Well, it was a late night for me. I'm just going to come right out with it. And I was out and about in New York City,
Okay.
and I went with some friends to this very famous place called Fleuron. It is apparently an institution in New York City, and it is closing down after 23 years. I was with friends who go there a lot and said, "Oh,
Why are you so afraid? You've
it's an
just been so
institution."
consistently afraid to
What?
say what time it is.
Okay, fine. It
All
was
times.
5:30 in the
Oh my
morning.
God! I didn't expect 5:30 in the morning. That is,
You're so crazy.
I'd have put that in my
Anyway,
back pocket and never talk about it again. Oh my
let's
God.
hurry and stop talking about my what I do in the weekends.
5:30?
BPP video producer Zeynep Barakat did a whole story on the closing of Florent, right? Am I saying this right? Am I trying to be
Yeah,
too
Florent.
hoity-toity by saying it Florent? Do people
You're
just call it
sounding
Florent?
like the new Meatpacking District folks when you say it that way.
Oh, interesting. They're probably not the good people in this story. So, what is up? Did you go visit? You went and paid a visit to Florent.
Yeah, I spent last week at Florent, and basically they're forced to close down because the rent is going up too high. Their landlord is raising the monthly rent from $6,000 to $30,000. Florent
Holy
Morellet, the owner,
cow.
Proposed that the rent that he will pay $18,000, but the landlord didn't accept that. And it's really a sign of what's going on in the whole neighborhood. I mean, the Meatpacking District, when Florent first opened in 1985, was nothing. It was butchers and cow carcasses hanging. And someone told me it smelled like blood in the streets. I mean, it was just terrible.
Ah, the
But
good old days,
the good old days.
yeah.
And so Florent opened this diner, and a diner that already existed, but he made it a scene. He made it a hip place to go and made a destination location. And now, 23 years later, I went to the Meatpacking District on Sunday, and I was walking around, and I still see old signs that show that it was the Meatpacking District, or that is the Meatpacking District. I saw a sign that said Lambs Unlimited, and underneath it, there are people sitting there eating brunch at white tablecloths, and there was a DJ, with a half his headphones on and DJing some nightclub music, and it was the middle of the afternoon on a Sunday.
Yeah, it's hip.
It's very hip, and there are the fanciest boutiques and so now
it's a little more upscale.
It's upscale.
And the rent is really expensive. And now they're holding these weekly parties. They're going through the five stages of grief, I understand, right?
They are. Florent is actually HIV positive and has been out as an HIV positive man since the 80s. And so he's very familiar with these stages of grief, and he's holding these weekly parties to help people get to where he is with this, which is acceptance. He's actually okay with this change.
Okay. So I want to talk about a character that you met, right? Darinka?
Yeah, let me tell you about Darinka. Now, before I met Darinka Chase, who's the hostess at Florent and has been there for 22 years, everyone kept telling me, "You've got to meet Darinka. She's the woman with a beehive hairdo." Everyone
Okay.
kept describing me a beehive hairdo. So she has this huge. So I met her. She has this huge beehive hairdo. It's about a foot above her head. It looks like she, took this huge hairdo and just placed it on her head every morning. And so she tells me that she's only gotten nervous once around a celebrity, and that was recently. And so she tells me that story now.
I came to work a few months back, and Amy Winehouse was the one on the tables. And I'm not a big actor, celebrity person, I think it's great that they come. But in New York, you see people like that a lot. But, I adore her, so that was sweet. But all I did was say, hi. I couldn't even say, I like your hair. And I love your music.
Yeah, she doesn't get nervous around celebrities, and that's why celebrities keep coming back. Calvin Klein, Michael Stipe,
Madonna,
Madonna.
All kinds of famous people. And the food, I have to say, is really good.
Is
The place
awesome.
is closing down after 23 years in business. Go check out Zeynep Barakat's video on Florent on our website, npr.org/Bryant Park. Thanks, Zeyna.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up next on the show, food around the world is not cheap. The UN's Food and Agricultural Organization is holding a crisis summit in Rome. We're going to get an update on that. This is the BPP from NPR News.
For Kitchen Window, I'm Bonnie Wolf. Nicole Spiridakis writes from San Francisco about food and travel on her blog, Cucina Nicolina. She has written a piece for Kitchen Window Online about how she learned to love feta. She joins me today. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Bonnie.
So you've had sort of a feta conversion.
That's a good way to put it, yes.
And this happened in Greece.
It did. It's a funny story, actually, because I remember very vividly the first time I ever tried feta cheese, and I was in third grade, and my school had this thing called a culture fair, and my mom, actually, she's not Greek, but my father is of Greek heritage, and so she did Greece for the kind of like the educational part of the festival, and so she had little tastes of feta cheese, and all the kids lined up and tasted it, and we all just thought it was so disgusting, it was so salty. But then I went to Greece, and I thought, well, you know, I might as well give it a try, because it's in literally almost every dish there that I came across, and it was pretty good. So
you had not eaten feta since the third grade before you went to Greece?
You know, I probably tasted it here and there, maybe inadvertently, but I never liked it.
Did the Greek feta taste different in Greece than it had in, or had your taste buds just matured?
I think it's kind of both. I think it in Greece, it's a bit milder. It's not quite as salty, and it's very creamy. And I think, I don't know, it just tastes fresher somehow. But when I get it here in the States now, it's still pretty good. So,
where were you in Greece?
I went to a small island called Spessis, which is in the Saronic Gulf. It's about 2 to 3 hours by ferry from Athens, visiting my brother who's living there.
Nice. So you decided to try it again, or you ate it inadvertently?
Well, my brother is a very persuasive guy, so when I arrived, we went out to have a little snack, and I was a bit jet-lagged, and I'm sitting there, and he says, well, we're getting feta, and we're getting this, and he ordered this melted feta, and I'm thinking, oh, man, you know, it's going to be all salty, and I'm not going to like it, but it was actually pretty good. I was hungry, but it went down pretty easily, and then when I got the salad, it just, yeah, it all kind of worked together, and they put a lot of olive oil, and it just kind of marinates the cheese, and it's delicious.
So you learn not to just like it, but to love it.
Right, exactly.
Now, what's called feta is strictly regulated in the EU now. Tell me a little bit about that ruling.
In 2005, the EU ruled that feta cheese, called feta, is a traditional Greek product, and it should be at least 70% sheep's milk cheese, and non-Greek European feta producers cannot call their product feta. So I've actually seen, for example, I think Denmark produces feta cheese, but it's called Danish feta cheese.
What is the percentage of sheep's milk in Greek feta?
It's 70%, and then the remainder is goat's milk.
How is feta made?
It is brined, and it's aged for at least a few months before being packaged.
Now, you talk about melted feta and warm feta. These are things I didn't know about.
Well, and they also fry it, which is saganaki, which is like a fried dish. But we had it melted, and it's kind of like a tomato feta dip almost. And it's nice because it's not too goopy, because the feta is a pretty firm cheese to begin with. And then my brother's girlfriend was visiting him as well, and she would take just a big piece, a big kind of a slab of feta, and warm it on the stove. And I'd never seen that before, and I think she learned it. She worked in a restaurant, so I think she learned it from the restaurant guys, because it just kind of softened it up a little bit but didn't melt it, and then you'd just dip your bread in it, and it was so good.
Did your father cook Greek food?
He does a little bit, but I have to say, my mom makes a pretty good spanakopita, and she's of Irish, Scottish heritage. So.
Anyone can learn.
Yes, exactly.
All right, Nicole, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
This is Day to Day. I'm Alex Chadwick.
And I'm Madeline Brand. Coming up, imagine never being more than 15 feet from your spouse. We talk with Slate's David Plotz and Hannah Rosen about their experiment.
First, though, trying to get enough to eat. Millions of Americans have to ask the government for help. The bad economy means that in some places, applications for food stamps have doubled in the last year.
And to make matters worse, because food is more expensive these days, government help is not going as far as it used to. Chicago Public Radio's Diantha Parker reports.
Laura Diaz begins her all-day grocery marathon at about 8 a.m. when she rounds up her three daughters, aged 9, 7, and 4, to take them to school. She's unemployed right now. Diaz's husband, Jose Luis, is a machinist who works at night. Their son, who's 3, stays home with his dad during the day, along with the family's bird and 5 Chihuahua Terrier mixes.
Okay, bye. See you later. You got everything? It's all right. Just don't mind my mess in my van.
Diaz's navy blue 1990 Dodge van is a mess. It also costs $60 to fill the tank. But she considers that a sound investment. She can drive to where she can get the most for her food stamp dollars. She's been on stamps for about 7 years.
It's embarrassing at first. You know, I'm one who does get shy at times. But you know what? Like I says, hey, I got to do something to help the husband, and that's what I did. I applied for food stamps, and I got it.
Diaz is 40-something and tall, with short black hair, powerful arms, and an easy laugh. She wants to get a job eventually. Here's the catch. She doesn't have a high school diploma, and any job she gets wouldn't pay enough to both buy food and pay for childcare. But it would pay too much for her to stay on food stamps. The bulk of her husband's paycheck goes toward a hefty mortgage. Here's how much this family of six has to eat on for all of June. $332 in food stamps. With that in mind, Diaz heads to a warehouse-sized place called Food for Less. Her list is based on what the newspaper circulars say is on sale.
Onions, I have a garlic, I have peaches, jalapenos, and broccoli, and a barbecue sauce, and the milk. And then the rest of the things I didn't put down, but they're somewhere in my head.
She knows a gallon of whole milk costs $2.48 here and gets 4 of them, hoping it's enough to last this week. We go home to drop off the milk, and then it's over to Cermak Grocery. She gets broccoli, bananas, chicken, and cilantro, but not everything she wanted.
It's not a good sale today. I don't know, but I guess I have meat in the freezer, so it's okay.
After every stop, she does the math. Back in the van, she looks at the receipt.
Okay, I spent $28.86. And my remaining balance is $247.54. So you imagine, the money goes quick.
So quick that the food stamps aren't enough to make it to the end of the month. So Diaz goes to the Casa Catalina food pantry, where she also volunteers. She spends a lot of time helping out there and gets everything from food to furniture when she needs it.
Okay, you found the place?
More like we went to the other one.
Sister Mary McIsaac says Casa Catalina serves more than 300 families a day.
And many people come in this area that don't live here. And so we have to tell them we can only give them emergency food one day, and then they have to go to a pantry in their neighborhood.
Here at Casa Catalina, David Esparza mans a cubicle for the Illinois Hunger Coalition, where Diaz gets her stamps. He says food stamp applications have doubled since January. Esparza is seeing more layoffs, especially in seasonal professions like construction. And after an unusually cold winter, many people are still paying for last season's heat.
This one woman had an overdue bill of over $1,000. I've seen $2,000. And that's like the number one thing they tell me. It's like my bills are killing me, like I don't know what to do. And I think that's what they're facing.
Food stamps are one of 15 government nutrition assistance programs. And the Agriculture Department says most recipients use several of them. For instance, Laura Diaz's kids get free breakfast and lunch at school. Now Esparza says a new demographic is calling the Hunger Coalition hotline, like the 50-something man collecting unemployment for the first time.
He actually had a PhD in clinical psychology, but he couldn't find any work.
More than 27 million people use food stamps right now, but the Agriculture Department estimates that in all, more than 42 million people are eligible. The government is trying to make the program more accessible in various ways, including a database of low-cost recipes and guidelines for stretching a budget while eating healthfully. For NPR News, I'm Diantha Parker in Chicago.
Southern recipes have been my passion since moving to Nashville. Whether it's fried green tomatoes or the perfect cream cheese icing for red velvet cake, I want to get it right. But since my family's Caribbean, I know next to nothing about one of the most popular Southern treats, fried chicken. Luckily, Nashville has more than the usual offerings. Here, fried chicken is soaked in a spicy, peppery sauce that burns hotter than a Tabasco lover's dream. The dish is a city specialty, and Prince's Hot Chicken Shack, a tiny hole-in-the-wall restaurant on the north side, is considered the place where it all started. The owner is Andre Prince Jeffries.
It's always been known as a late-night place. And when the Grand Ole Opry would get out on Friday and Saturday night, they would come to the Chicken Shack, which was not that far away. And the whites ate in the back, and the blacks ate in front.
These days, blacks and whites wait together in the front of the restaurant to pick up their orders.
Thank you, ma'am. 8, 9, 11. 8, 9, and 11. Thank you.
Most have followed the restaurant as it's moved from location to location in the city. Alyssa Leonard has been ordering up Prince's Hot Chicken every Friday for the last 20 years.
It's traditional fried chicken. It's crispy. I guess the bang that you get here is the spices that no matter what, how you try to do your chemistry at home, you never can recreate this flavor.
And several customers have tried to do their own chemistry and open up similar hot chicken shacks with varying degrees of success. But you just can't dump cayenne on the bird and call it a day. And Andre Jeffries assures me that Prince's recipe is top secret.
This business has always been in my family for 60-some-odd years. My great-uncle started it, Thornton Prince. Of course, I give credit to his lady friend. My great-uncle, being a womanizer, had been out all night. And for revenge, to get him back, she sprinkled something on his fried chicken for breakfast that morning. And instead of a punishment, he liked it, told his friends about it, and that's how it really got started.
In the kitchen, cooks are frying up the chicken breasts and quarters. When the meat comes out, they spoon a fiery red liquid over the top and set the sopping chicken on a slice of Wonder Bread. A toothpick holds down the neon green pickle slice. You can order it mild or hot, which even Jeffrey says she can't handle, although new customers often try.
Joe, it's real hot. You better...
Veronica Grant is turning her new boyfriend onto Prince's. Joe Bronson is down from Kentucky to see what all the hubbub is about.
He loves
it's
it.
Great. I do.
Now, what does it taste like?
Chicken with a lot of pepper on it. But it's good. It has a good taste, good flavor.
Good crust.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Seasoned good.
How's the heat doing? Because there's a tear in the corner of your eye here.
Well, yeah. Don't pay no attention to that.
Bronson's tougher than me. The first time I had hot chicken, I had more than a tear in my eye. Nowadays, I stick to the mild. And I've learned from the folks at Prince's that it's better to have a cool glass of buttermilk to wash it down.
Here we go, y'all. Your white boat arms and your white boat feet. You together, baby. You're right on the beat. You flap your arms and your feet start kicking. Then you know you're doing the funky chicken. Oh, oh, it's all right.
This is NPR's Weekend Edition, directed by Ned Wharton, with production help from Laura Krantz, Eamon Malone, Gemma Waters, David Shulman, and Katerina Valdivieso. We had help from our librarians, Key Molesky and Mary Glendenning. Our technical director is Burke Hahn, and our engineer is Kevin Maynor. Our theme music was written by B.J. Lederman. Our senior editor is Jenny Burgle. Our senior producer is Devar Iran Ardalan. And today we say goodbye to David Rector, who worked at NPR for more than 25 years and on this show for the past 8. While he produced our puzzle segment every week, he also had a passion for the movies. So this one's for you, David. Speaking of movies, we remember actress Marilyn Monroe. She was born on this day, 82 years ago. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Audie Cornish.